I mean, for Matt, he's on his way.
He said he's on his way? Okay. We'll delay about 30 seconds.
Okay, we're ready.
Welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting, July 8th, 2015. Can we do a roll call, Ms. Celia?
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Garrow?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. Karen, can I ask you to lead us in a flag salute?
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Okay, do we have anything on the agenda that needs to be reviewed, modified, rectified, changed?
President Lucy, there was one modification, and that would be for agenda item 9B,
okay.
The payroll summary report, and copies are available, is modified to include the vacation and sick leave payout for the office manager position.
Okay, great. So let's remember to include that supporting document. Thank you. Are there any other changes?
I have none.
Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to accept the agenda.
I so move.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. Opposed? Abstain? 5-0, Celia. Okay, at this time, I'll take public comment for matters that are not on the agenda. And I have a Mr. Charles Varney.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm Charles Varney. I'm a property owner and live here in Oceano. And first of all, I'm here tonight to invite you to our Anti-Phillips 66 Coalition protest rally and march Saturday morning in San Luis Obispo at 11:30 a.m. We'll be gathering at Mitchell Park and walking on Oso Street over to the County Government Center to make our feelings known to the building. and gather our grassroots forces together. So we have I have a two-sided handout for you. One has the invitation on it, and then one has the information that we've been distributing around the neighborhoods of Oceano and Grover Beach and Pismo Beach.
Charles, I think you came by my house the other day.
We had a nice chat. Thank you.
I went to the website for OCSD, and the opening, there's two pictures, one labeled Gateway to the Oceano Dunes, and the other says Oceano's Local Government. And I've always considered you my local government, and as a government, I would expect you to be looking out for my safety, and if there was any project that was being proposed to that would have significant, like seven environmental, unmitigatable, unavoidable environmental impacts, including train derailment, fires, and explosions, that you'd be on top of that, and you'd be concerned for me, and you would be notifying me. And that's not happening. And I'm not faulting you. Actually, it'd be great if Phillips 66 was informing all of us, like the Southern Counties Gas Company is doing on all of their retrofits and that are going to be going on. So what we've discovered, first of all, the blast zone of the train derailment, which is set by the Department of Transportation, shows that 88% of our population lives in the blast zone. And as we're canvassing the neighborhoods, over 80% of people have not heard about the oil trains. They don't know what's going on. They don't know the threat to themselves. And so we've been informing them, and it's really straightforward. It's an easy thing to describe. And once we give them the 45-second facts, 90% of them go, why the heck is that happening to us? Why would that be going on in our community? Darn, time flies. So what I would like to ask is that you take the step of notifying people who live in the blast zone. You can do it easily by including a circular in the water bill or in the waste management bill. And at least people are going to know what's going on. And I would also ask you finally, quickly, our biggest threat is fire that you have authority over with Five Cities Fire Organization. And I would ask you to go to your fire authority and your first responders and ask them to give you some feedback on this. Does this threaten the community? Does it lower our safety? And I think that will give you a clear nexus and connection to be able to stand up on this, for this, against it, hopefully. Thank you, and I apologize for going over.
Oh, that's fine. Thank you, sir. Okay.
I think that was 3 minutes.
What?
Was that 3 minutes?
It was over.
Yeah.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Lawrence Schinnerman, please.
You know, I'd like to turn into Lawrence and speak for him, but I don't think I really can. So
okay.
I put that in for him. He obviously didn't make it on time, so
I
apologize.
Okay. Mr. Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Lucy, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I'd like to preface my remarks by dispelling a rumor that I think is largely perpetuated by Ms. Lucy, and that is why I come to these meetings and provide testimony to your board. Also, Julie, it's been questioned why she's here, and Ms. Lucy, I think you've asserted that we're paid by some big developer or somebody for something. And I want to tell this board that there's one reason we come here as frequently as we do. Not because we're being paid. I can tell you we're not paid a dime, but because we care about Oceano. So with that said, I also believe that individually, as board members, you care about Oceano. But collectively, it seems that you're unable or unwilling to do some strategic steps, perform some strategic steps. And Ms. Lucy, you've also asserted that all is well in Oceano, and I have to take exception to that. I'll give you a couple examples. One of your businesses in town, the Rock and Roll Diner, maybe you've heard their radio or television ad. They talk about their location 2 miles south of Pismo Beach on Highway 1. Never mention Oceano, not at all, yet they're certainly a fixture here. Also, as you may know, in spite of the economic recovery and the national unemployment rate of around 6%, this town is still in double-digit unemployment. Fully 20% of your town is below the poverty level. And I believe 2/3 of it is at a medium household income of about $40,000. Your town is struggling. It's struggling economically in spite of an economic upturn. So where are your opportunities? What can you do? Well, you've got several big picture items. First of all, the ODSVRA. Pier Avenue was to be a temporary access to the ODSVRA, and in the 1982 coastal permit, it was supposed to be moved. Well, you have that opportunity now. Phillips 66 is the appropriate location for an entrance to the ODSVRA. It's immediately adjacent. So there's one opportunity. Move the entrance to the ODSVRA. Number two, you may know the Sand District is struggling with capital improvement projects, thinking about how to take that facility into the future. And I can tell you from attending the Coastal Commission meeting today in Ventura, where they spoke a lot about sea level rise and planned retreat, I can tell you that plant needs to move upstream. Why would this board not support moving the Sand District facility outside of Oceano? And then lastly, the airport. And I think the conflicts with the community are obvious. Ms. Angelo, last meeting, spoke of the noise and unable to speak on the telephone. So these are game-changing possibilities, game-changing opportunities. And this will free Oceano potentially. Most importantly, and what I think is the crux of your struggles, is that few people want to invest in Oceano. So let's create a different picture. Let's attract investment to Oceano.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you.
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker, and I completely agree with Mr. Barney.
Oh, are you kidding? That's unfortunate. I completely agree with Mr. Varney that much of your community is in the dark on the Phillips 66 project. And I've come before your board. Mr. Varney's been here before. People from the Mesa. And they're all asking you to take a position. And someone gave you the idea that you don't have the authority to do that. And I categorically disagree. You have infrastructure in the blast zone. Everything you own is in that blast zone. Collection lines, fire hydrants, your water tanks, your wells, your CSD office, fire station, your sheriff substation, everything that goes under the ground and under the tracks over to the other side, the west side of town, it's all vulnerable to an explosion. So I encourage you to agendize the issue and take a position as other agencies, other cities, others are doing. And you can too. And you are first. You're first in line. And you absolutely should be first taking a position. I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened last meeting with my ability to testify. And twice tonight already, we're only a few minutes into the meeting, and Miss Lucy's rolling her eyes at the public commenter. It's very inappropriate. It's very distracting. Sure, you can do it. The public's not seeing it. The camera's on me. Twice last meeting, you interrupted me. Ms. White interrupted me. Your attorney interrupted me. Never was I off topic. You just didn't like what I was saying. I have the right. Doesn't matter where I live, what color I am, certainly. Nothing matters but that I'm here. And I have the right to speak to your board on items within your purview. I mentioned a staff member. And I have the right to criticize staff, to praise staff, to point out whatever I want about your staff. Mr. Minery gave you all a Brown Act refresher a few months ago. You had one in October, a year and a half before that. Mr. Minery, I would ask you to brief your council, your board.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker.
I have more than 3 minutes, just like the two speakers in front of me. And I would like to finish my sentence. And I would like to ask Mr. Minery to brief your board on the BACA decision and the Brown Act. Again, if necessary, if you haven't heard about it, we can speak to your staff and anything that concerns us about your staff's performance. And last meeting, I was suggesting somebody get a raise. In your financially strapped district, I was suggesting someone get a raise.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. Try not to roll my eyes. So, does anybody else have any public comments they'd like to speak on? Yes, sir.
Hello. My name is Wes Mallow. I'm the son of Mary Mallow, and she owns some property at 1445 13th Street, Oceano. She's owned it for a little over 30 years. We received a bill on the water on 520 for the amount of $885. This is a two-bedroom, two-bath home. We were totally shocked on that. The historical usage of water for that property has been 30 to 33 units. So we contacted the office, and we were told that we must have a leak. So I went over there. There was no leak. We were also said that the toilets were leaking. No, the toilets weren't leaking. So we were also told that possibly the renter is selling water. Well, we were charged for 201 units. That's 150,000 gallons of water. That's a 30-foot diameter, 25-foot tall tank of water that supposedly is leaking on our property over there. So that wasn't the problem. A leaky toilet is 6,000 gallons a month, and that's less than a quarter of a gallon a minute. So I got with our gardeners. They go over there twice a month, and they said there was no water, no soggy ground, no signs of leakage anywhere at all. So I contacted Tony, and he was kind enough to go over there to the property with me, and him and I walked every inch of that property. We looked. He even wanted to go underneath the house. It's a wood floor house. I told him too many spiders, you know, but we looked with flashlights, seen no signs of water leakage of any sort at all. So we went back, and we looked at the meter. The meter wasn't turning. So we opened up a valve out in the yard, and the meter would turn. We shut it off, it would stop. Everything seemed to be working fine. So then we turned the water on, and Tony pointed out to me that the needle on the meter was jumpy. And he says that the meter is over 20 years old and it should be replaced. I agreed with him. So he replaced the meter right then and there, and we even helped him. And so he said he could have the meter tested. It cost me $40 to have it tested. So I went ahead, I paid the $40. He got the test back. Then after he got it back, they told me that I could have been there for the testing of the meter, which I wasn't. I didn't know anything about that. They said the meter failed because it was reading on our behalf, not on against us. And it does not read under a half a gallon a minute. So it actually failed the test, but on your favor. So I did some research on that. Now, I own a water well company. I'm Mallow & Sons Pumps and Motors. I did some work for some of the board members here. And I used to do all the work for Oceano. So old water meters wear out. 20-year-old water meters wear out. The gears wear out. And if it's jumpy, they jump a number. And this is possibly could have happened. Another thing, if we were selling water at the 10 gallons a minute to fill a 3,000-gallon water truck, there would be 42 water trucks over at that property, and I'm sure nobody's seen that like Tom Selleck still. Three, if the toilet leaked, it would be 0.14 gallons a minute. The meter doesn't read anything under a half a gallon a minute, so it wasn't a leaky toilet. So everything was done, and, you know, I have a customer, a farmer, that we have a 20-gallon a minute pump in there, and we put a brand-new meter, and it's working fine. His other meter down the street is reading 64 gallons a minute, so meters do read wrong.
I don't mean to cut you off, but you've worked with staff on this, right? And has there been a resolution?
No, there hasn't. And they suggested.
Can I ask that you continue to work with staff and come to a.
Well, we talked with my brother handles my mom's finances. She's 88 and she can't comprehend anything. So we've been trying, and they recommended coming and having the board hear this.
Okay, what we really strongly encourage you to do is to work with the staff, right? To come to a mutual agreement that's beneficial to you and the district, right? Mm-hmm. If you can't come to some kind of resolution that's fair and equitable, right, then you appeal to the board.
But I believe.
President Lucy, I'd be more than glad to meet with Mr. Mello. I have not.
You have not met with
no,
him?
No, I have not.
Okay. I really strongly encourage you to meet with Mr. Ogren.
Okay.
And I think that. Because
we had
satisfied.
We had sent the payment in, or half of it in, and they said they were going to something about locking stuff out if it's not all paid and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going from $180 to $890 is a big jump in water bill.
Most definitely. We're not disagreeing with you on
and
that.
I know that.
But I do think that if you work with Mr. Ogren, I think that you'll be satisfied with the outcome.
Okay.
We're not
That's
in
fair
the
enough.
Business of.
Right, I understand that too.
But we will do a historical look, and it'll be fair. And at that time, if you're unhappy with the outcome, please, by all means, you know.
Yeah, we did a historical look on it for the last year, and it's been 30 to 33 units.
Yeah.
And now it's 201. And so
we'll get it fixed.
The new meter, I went out and read it today, and we're back to 15 units so far, so
okay,
it's back to normal.
So we'll all get on the same page.
Okay. Thank you very much. And how do I meet with...
You just call him.
Just here at the office?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's
fair enough.
Available.
All right. Thank you
Thanks
very much.
Thanks for coming down.
Okay.
All right. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak into public comment? No? Hearing none? Yes, ma'am. Director White stepping down from the dais and going to the... public podium.
Karen White, 1566 Hiawatha Lane, Halcyon. I would like to express my displeasure in the decision by Calcos News to use a photograph of the Welcome to Oceano sign to illustrate a story about the July 4th weekend spill at the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation Plant. The choice to link Oceana with spilled sewage was, in my opinion, extremely thoughtless or thoughtlessly hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
It does illustrate a reason for the recent allegation made by Mary Lucy, Oceana Community Services District Board President, that the community of Oceana is negatively impacted by the location of the Valley's sewer plant at the edge of the community. A Roy Grandy, Grover Beach, Oceano, and for the outfall line, Pismo Beach, all share the South Sanitation Plant, and there is a sign outside the plant that could have been photographed for identification. But instead, spilled sewer in the streets was only linked to Oceano. It really does not seem fair to me, but I certainly understand that those wishing to disrupt the accomplishments of others or achieve their own goals at the expense of others do not play fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. White, for pointing that out. I, too, found that to be extremely offensive since it is a mutual collaboration. All right. Do we have any public comment on committees and Committees and board assignments. Why do I always get that one screwed up? Oh, well. Any special presentations? Hearing none. Okay. Let's go with the reports, and then after committee and outside committees, I'll go back and do public comment.
President Lucy, can we have the maybe the reports, because we don't have anybody here from the Sheriff's South Station, Five Cities Fire Authority, or operations yet. Tony may be here later. He was.
Do you want me to table? Class. What are you asking for?
Put it on later in the meeting if, in case Tony shows up, unless Pablo's going to do the operations
the
report.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask Pablo.
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate to defer the Tony's report until after he shows up.
So that would have fallen under number four, gentlemen.
Understood. Yes, but I didn't notice Tony wasn't here until then.
Okay. We'll move the Sheriff's South Station, OCSD operations, and the Five Cities Fire Authority down to, say, after number nine. How's that?
All right.
Is that agreeable?
Well, no, why don't we do it after eight, and just in case they show up.
Okay.
Because there's public comment on those items. Well, actually, it is after nine. You're right. I apologize. You're right.
Speak up, Matt.
I apologize. You're right. After nine is an appropriate place because that's...
So you want it under nine?
After nine.
After nine.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Let's go with eight. Outside committees. Dick D'Angelo.
I did not attend anything.
Didn't attend anything?
No.
Okay. Ms. Blackburn?
I did not have any outside committees either.
Okay. I also did not have any outside committee meetings. President White.
Yeah, I just have a couple of little reports from the Five Cities Fire Authority. Okay. The first thing is the 4th of July holidays in the Five Cities Fire Authority area, there was no major incidents. We had four fire trucks on duty instead of three. All available hands were on deck, and the fire chief himself and both the battalion and acting battalion chief were on patrol. I talked to the fire chief today, and he said he spent a lot of time in Oceano. And what they did was just, they didn't give tickets, but they did confiscate a lot of illegal fireworks. They made collections around. But luckily, there was no incidents. The other happy thing is the 5th anniversary celebration of the Five Cities Fire Authority is going to be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, July 17th. That's a regular Five Cities Fire Authority meeting date at Station 2, which is Grover Station at 701 Rockaway. And there's going to be a birthday cake, and anybody interested is invited. And... So that's it at this time.
Great. And I just would like to add that the Five Cities Fire Authority was up in the Santa Margarita area fighting that fire, and I wanted to thank them for that. I heard the Board of Supervisors thank others and failed to include the Five Cities Fire Authority, so I thought maybe we would just...
They were also
in. Thumbs up for that one.
They also were in Corbett Canyon yesterday afternoon. We had what could have been a baddie.
Yeah.
An oak tree fell over and took out a power line, and they held it in half an acre. But the winds have been kind of erratic in the last couple of days, and they got real scared for a while because you get one of those canyons on fire, and we're going to have, could have real potential, real hazard in. Loss of property and maybe even lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Guerrero.
Yes, thank you. I appeared at the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting last Wednesday. There were a number of items. I'm going to address a few of them.
What were you wearing?
I have no idea. I was wearing a button-up shirt. Button-up shirt and jeans, I think. The first was we had an emergency meeting regarding some holes that were found in the line that brings the trunk line that brings the effluent into the plant. This is about a 400-foot line that comes in. They were working on another project, and they had it exposed, so they decided to take a look. And they found holes in it, and they found about 300. I think that was the estimate, about 300 gallons of sewage that had spilled into or near the line.
Near where the intersection is?
No. Near the line that goes into the plant.
Okay.
So what happened was they set up, they routed around it, and they set up a couple of diesel pumps that are taking the sewage, and they're pumping it to the headworks. And so the engineer was there. Thank you. Cough drop. Excuse me, everybody. And they had in one day come up with three cost proposals. Really good work, really good initiative on behalf of the staff, which I appreciate. And the three cost proposals had a variety of options. Ultimately, we ended up choosing the lowest cost option, which also seemed that it was the best option. And so to describe this pipe, it's a 30-inch pipe that's designed to carry about 20 million gallons a day of sewage to go into the plant. Right now, our flow rates peak are about 5 million gallons a day, with an average of about 2.4 million gallons a day that go into the plant. It all doesn't come in, obviously, smoothly. It's kind of like traffic on a freeway, where there's peak times and then there's lower times. It's a 30-inch pipe that has rotted. That's why they had the small spill there. But what they're proposing to do is to use an insert, and it'll be this. It's a type of plastic, but it's going to be a 24-inch pipe that's inserted inside of the 30-inch pipe, and this has a 10 million gallon a day capacity. So it should be able to handle our flows quite nicely. And that's about a $360,000 project. The board did take action on that for that amount, which was a lower amount. The higher amounts were around $400,000 and $460,000, which included putting a pipe next to it or just replacing it, I believe. I don't remember the third option off the top of my head. But so this will maintain the current mapping, and so it'll be obviously the fastest and easiest and most cost-effective way to go. It'll also be encased then in this other pipe, so I guess in the future, should there be another spill, it'll be partially encased. This was not negligence of staff. This particular pipeline that started leaking, the 30-inch pipe, was videoed just in June or July of last summer.
Thank you.
Then when it was videoed, there was no fault found in the pipe. So this was a regular maintenance item, and we were just fortunate to have that happen. Of course, the other side of that is that the plant was then, because of the diesel pumps and the emergency operations that were going on and are still continuing to go on, the plant now has to be staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the reason is because it requires some manual operations on when to open some valves and to help the headworks so that it doesn't overflow. This procedure has not proven to be perfect, as Mary and I discovered on, was it Friday night? Or was it Saturday? It was Friday night, yeah. On Friday night, we got called out. There was overflows going on. We will let Tony made it. Welcome this evening, sir. There were overflows that were happening right then because the, I'll let Tony describe it, but there was a spill that went out into the surrounding neighborhoods around the plant. Raw sewage backed up, came out of the manhole covers in numerous places, and not just around the plant, but also by the bridge near the duck pond. So there was some sewage spill there. The one near the duck pond, we got, as Tony will describe, we got very lucky on. that portion of it. And I'll let Tony describe it. We went out and took pictures and talked to some witnesses and this kind of thing. The plant still continues to operate this way. It's going to operate this way until the parts are come in and they're able to start the construction process. This could take a significant amount of time. The other item, or another item of interest to this board, was the billing item got revisited regarding Oceano doing the billing for the sanitation district. There's not a unanimous approach to this. What staff was directed to do was to go out and find the least cost alternative, which will probably end up being to put the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District billings for Oceano on the tax rolls. And that may, we'll probably look at it for doing that for Grover and for Arroyo Grande as well. It's not an easy process. And in the meantime, at this point, there is nobody billing for the sanitation district. New bills, the readings have not gone on for the water department. Those bills have not gone out. This board may want to consider giving some direction to staff regarding this, and we can talk about that. I can hear in a second. And then the final thing was there were some disturbing comments made by Mayor Hill about accusing the attorneys that are handling some litigation for us of not being honest with the board staff. I thought the way that they were made were inappropriate, the comments made by Mr. Hill, because they were made out in open session without any alert to the board that this was going to happen. And so after hearing these comments, the board went into closed session excuse me, and agreed to investigate the comments made by Mr. Hill. So that was my meeting. That's the short version. There were some other things that went on about receiving a report from the auditor, but
does anybody have any questions? Because I actually have some, but I'd rather have those go first.
No, I was there.
Yeah, so. Karen White was there. I appreciated seeing her.
Let's talk about the spill first.
Yeah.
I actually was.
Maybe Tony can join us for this because he.
Yeah. Come on up, Tony.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. As for the spill, I got an initial call at 7:03 by the general manager, actually. He was notified by a citizen. I arrived there approximately 7:15, and observing the spills that took place, the SSO actually had stopped by then, but there was still wastewater on the ground.
And for those at home, SSO is?
Sewer system overflow. So we had four manholes that were affected by the sanitation district and one clean out. They had two manholes that were affected. It was approximately, the total spill was approximately 2,000 gallons. Out of our manholes and clean out, it was approximately just over 700 gallons. And they immediately started disinfecting. We had a Vector truck get called out. I called it out for them.
Can I ask that there be quiet in the back of the room, please?
As they disinfected, the Vector truck came and sucked up the remnants of the SSO. We had a manhole that was San Luis County Parks, right there on Air Park Drive. There's a manhole. And when that spilled out, it made a little turn into what is an oil trap. And it's actually specced out and designed to catch oil and not leave the park because of the surface water there, which was a good thing because all the wastewater was caught right there and it was vacuumed up with the dirt and everything that was there at that location. So Currently, we had the Environmental Health Services actually come out at approximately 8:30. They evaluated the cleanup, the disinfectant, and they stated that there was no public health or safety issues. So there was nothing that they had to present to the public at that time. After the observing the cleanup and everything taking place, so it went really well.
Great. I'm really glad you were there. First of all, I got 6 calls from people on the island because I do know my neighbors, and they all called to say that this was occurring, and so I called Matt, and we headed on down just to see, you know, basically how staff handles the procedures, the protocols, and I was told at the beginning it was about 300 gallons of sewage, and the manholes, as I was coming in, they were a little damp around the outside, but there was nothing, you know, gushing. And at the lowest point on Maui, you know, that was probably the worst, and there was maybe, you know, a foot off manholes that there was some sewage. I asked, you know, what happened, you know, what created the backup, and it was, and numerous people told me operator error, you know, that the operator at the plant had turned off the pumps, and so, of course, things backed up into as much as it could into the pipe, and then started, you know, going up through the manholes. And so what would cause operator error?
I don't believe it's just operator error. The plant is operating, as Matt said, it's on emergency pumps.
Madam President, at this point in time where, if I might add some comments, because, well, it's clear that the incident occurred, it would be premature at this time to draw any conclusions as to what occurred. Even though in many situations it might seem obvious as to what happened, there's an important regulatory reporting process that we're going through. Of course, having open discussions on the matter is important now, and as, you know, the review continues, I just want to make sure that we're all cautioned from not drawing conclusions.
It was actually the plant supervisor said operator error. I also asked the fire department operator error, and I had asked you too, Tony.
Yes,
you know,
and
at that time you thought, well, maybe, you know, it was operator error. So I'm just trying to get a definition. I'm not trying to draw a conclusion.
Okay.
I'm just trying to get a definition of what an operator error is.
Well, there's just multiple things that led up to the event. You have an extremely high flow. It is July 3rd. You've seen all the people that are here. So the inflow to the plant was extremely high. You're on emergency pumps as is because the main line is
right
down.
And you could hear them going. They were very loud.
Yeah, and then you are being staffed 24 hours a day because of that. So there is a lot of events that added up to it. And in my opinion, it's just the timing was just a little bit slow opening up for that main line that is being shut down so they can accommodate that higher flow.
Okay, and I understand that that's not your plant, right?
Correct.
So I don't expect you to know all these questions, you know. But when you're operating in that status, right, how many operators do you have on staff for a plant that size? Would it be one operator, 2, 4?
I honestly couldn't answer that question, Mary, President.
Okay, so that would be a question for the SAND district.
Yes,
correct.
Okay. Secondly, is that when the reports go in, because, you know, I know nothing about submission of a report, right? I was told that it was a verbal report.
For Oceano Community Services District, I have a report obligation. It was a Category 3. What that means for CWIX is it was less than 1,000 gallons out of our sewer system, out of our collection system,
mm-hmm.
out of those 4 manholes and 1 cleanup. So a Category 3, it did not make it to any surface water. It's less than 1,000 gallons, and it is a reportable event and has to be reported within 30 days of the event.
Okay, so would that define whether it's a written report or an oral report?
Any SSO is going to be a reportable event that's
And it will
submitted.
Be a written report?
Yes.
Because I sent an email to the Sand District, and they said that it was just a verbal report. And I guess I'm going to take that as just a temporary measure at this point until the next meeting, and by then it will be written up. Because I can't imagine, with the bureaucracies as they are, that you could just do a over-the-phone report. I mean, I just can't imagine that.
They did submit a Category 2 report to CWICS.
So there is a written report.
That is correct. And because they exceeded 1,000 gallons.
Because I have an email today saying that, no, it was strictly a verbal report.
Madam President, maybe a point of clarification on that is that in responding underneath sewer system management plans, SSMPs, there's really two types of responses that we're obligated to provide to the regulatory agencies.
Okay.
One is the notification that there is a spill that's occurring. Mm-hmm. And so that's verbal and it's immediate, and my understanding is that those did occur. That notification is verbally provided to the California Office of Emergency Services, and then Cal OES is responsible for notifying other agencies that may need to respond to the incident. That notification process itself includes some details so that when Cal OES does outreach to other possible responding agencies, they can provide guidance on, is this a significant event? Is water quality being impaired? And help to then to coordinate a larger response when and if necessary. So the point one is that there's a notification responsibility to Cal OES. Secondly, there's the CWICS reporting responsibility that Tony is speaking to, and we have a CWICS reporting responsibility as well. That in this particular case, we believe we have a 30-day reporting responsibility too. As part of our SSMP process, what I will be doing is sitting down with Tony and reviewing the incident and reviewing our CWICS report and the notification process. The recently updated SSMP puts that responsibility on me to review how we responded in the situation and did our response comply with your board adopted SSMP. A couple of highlights is how were the quantities determined? Because certainly in our regulatory environment, these estimates of, about 2,000 gallons in total and something roughly about 700 out of our manholes, those estimates themselves, we have to identify how did we develop those estimates. Clearly, that's important because the 2010 event that happened at the Sand District, there was quite a variance in estimates of what kind of a spill happened. So that's going to be part of my review with Tony is how are those quantity estimates determined, and what was everybody's overall response to the incident. A couple of things that are noteworthy, and I'll conclude my comments, because I think what we're doing is we're appropriately identifying and talking about that there is an incident, and as a future agenda item, we'll come back and we'll lay out, all the details and our findings and everything. But certainly it happened during an emergency situation, and in any emergency situation, there is a higher likelihood of a human error associated with it. But it was an emergency. They were operating an emergency bypass. The second factor that increased risks was it was high weekend flows because of July 4th. The good news is that it was quickly contained. And, Tony, my understanding was by the point in time that you actually were able to get out in the field, there was no more overflows occurring that they had already stopped. So that is certainly an indication that the situation was quickly contained. Those three items, again, two risk factors, emergency bypass operations, high weekend flows to July 4th, and then, the idea that it was relatively quickly contained. So we have more report. We have work that we need to do. We have to compare our responses and our reporting to the SSMP, and we'll come back to your board with the overall review and findings as appropriate once we've completed that.
Great. Matt, can I... And can I expect a report from the sanitation district as well?
Yes, I would expect that to be on the agenda next week, and an update of whatever information is known at this time. I think, as Tony and Pablo said, that as evaluation is done, sometimes opinions can change. Like, for example, in the 2010, the spill, you know, went from, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons to millions of gallons estimates.
Right.
Everybody working with the same information, and so.
And I think it's good to figure out how they could draw those conclusions. But I was just a little taken back that I was answered with, no, it's just a verbal reporting, and that's what kind of sent a little bit of an alarm up in me.
I think they have had a 24-hour reporting requirement, so they had to report it by Saturday. Is that what you think, Tony?
They have a three working day requirement.
Is it 3 days?
For a Category 2, yes.
For Category 2?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, great. Karen?
Yeah. It sounds like that our newly prepared SMP was beneficial to our staff, and that we fulfilled all the obligations that we had under the law. And my question then would be that are we looking at any kind of threat of fine or anything like that?
I would not anticipate a fine, although I can't draw that conclusion. There is often minimum mandatory fines, but you know, again, there's no evidence that action or inaction on the part of Oceano CSD contributed to this event.
Yeah.
So I think it would be unlikely that we would be facing a fine. The update to the SSMP certainly has been beneficial because we went through our internal training on what we need to do. We all got up to speed. And then in response to this incident, not only Tony and I are going to be looking at it, but the other operators. We're going to be going through it with other staff so that it's a learning experience for everybody. And then lastly, an incident like this will identify, are there other things that we should be doing? Because in the one case of the one manhole, as I understand it, County Parks happened to have a facility that caught some of this. And do we need to think more about the proximity of our manholes to the sand district, the fact that in the last, you know, 5 years, essentially, there's been two incidences, and do we need to put in other facilities like surge tanks to protect against overflows, you know, whether they're a result of our actions or inactions or not? And that is, I think, probably part of the dialogue that will be follow-up with the regulatory agencies, because there still are manholes, and if there's overflows and we have risks of wastewater coming out of our manholes, whether, again, it's our actions or inactions, you know, should we have surge tanks or other things to, you know, help catch some of that to ensure that it doesn't get into a surface water body? So there's multiple different things. You know, we want to make sure to review the SSMP and our actions in comparison to the actual plan and what we're supposed to be doing. We want to use it as a staff training opportunity, and we also want to use it as an opportunity to identify, are there other things that maybe we should be doing, even if they're not strictly required by the regulators?
And one, this is a comment. I would like to see how much this is going to cost our district in man hours, overtime, expenses.
And we are definitely
seeing that at some time. I realize now you can't get it. At this point, it's not.
That's right. But we will be compiling all the cost impacts to our district.
Any way to pass that on?
Certainly there are ways to pass that on, yes. And so we will be addressing that as well.
Thank you.
Just finally, the only two other things. Mary and I spoke with a lot of the residents out there, and I think they were appreciative of the rapid response and that it was contained as it was. Second thing was disturbing when we walked around the plant.
Oh.
The size of the homeless encampment outside of the plant gates, literally feet away. I don't know how many acres it went on for, how many people are out there, but it's very entrenched.
Over 30 tents.
Very entrenched yards set up. You know, it was really something. And this was where we had, was it earlier this year or later last year, where they had the the fire because they were stealing power off of them.
They had been taking power off the outside lighting, and of course, you know, I was poo-pooed, you know, and that the supervisor had assured me that he'd walked it, and I actually found the wires within, you know, a minute of looking.
Did you?
But that did create a fire, them tapping off the encampment back there is, it's probably bigger than our parking lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Much, much bigger than our parking lot, and it's actually quite creative that they have the black paper from the strawberry fields surrounding it, and then they put debris and branches and stuff.
Camouflage it.
To camouflage it. So I was out there again yesterday counting tents and trying to count how many propane tanks there are out there. I could not count how many propane tanks.
So this may be a good time to seg to Tony's post operations report.
I'd also like to inform the board, if you're available tomorrow, we'll be pulling well 5. We'll be pulling pump, casing, column tube shaft. We'll be pulling that out.
What time?
It'll probably start about 10 tomorrow. They'll get out there and set up, and it'll last for quite a few hours.
And that's well 5?
Well 5 at the yard, yes.
Can I, and this might be off topic, but it, on Pier Street, is Parks and Recs putting in a new well there? Because it looked like they were drilling for a new well.
They're putting in pilings.
Yeah, Madam President.
They're putting in pilings.
Yeah, it's the method of densifying the soils underneath the structures that are going to be constructed. And what they do is they basically create about a 36-inch hole, and then they drop rock into it and then vibrate that in order to densify the soil. It's roughly the same technique that was used to densify Lopez Dam, and it's in order to protect against liquefaction. So that's what they're doing. And it's stonework as opposed to solid columns, and that reduces, you know, impacts and vibrations and pounding and everything. But it's a pretty common technique for densifying soils that you're going to put buildings on.
Right. Well, most experience I have is putting in a bean pole, so... Do you have other stuff you want to tell us about, Tony?
Let you know that Lopez Lake is currently at 35.8% full, which is 17,656 acre feet. We had no SSOs for the month of June or January or June. Sorry about that, June. We got well 5 prepped, ready to go for tomorrow. We had our first of the month laterals. We had to go out and clean all the equipment checks for the first of the month. And then I'll give you the total water production next board meeting for groundwater and surface water.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. The residents wanted me to tell you that specially.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Obrin, do you have any committee reports?
I do not at this time. The Zone 3 Advisory Committee will be meeting next week, and so at the next board meeting that I attend, I'll be at the Zone 3 Committee meeting next week. Vacation's the following. So my next board meeting, I'll report out on Zone 3.
Anytime you want to, you know, vacation early, let me know.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else have anything they want to report? Mr. Minery, would you like to jump on board? No? Okay. So let's do a public comment now, and then we'll do public comment again for the consent agenda. Is there any public comment for the directors outside committees?
Oh. Madam?
Yes.
No. President?
Yes.
The ordering is that we would do public comment on the consent agenda. Under item 10, then.
I was just trying to be nice.
Okay. Well, the next public comment is on committee...
I can't help rolling my eyes. They just roll. They've rolled all my life, you know?
Would be committee reports and the business item. So...
Okay. So what do you want me to do?
Well, under the ordering of the agenda, we would have the consent agenda at this time.
Okay.
It's your discretion, though.
Yeah, obviously, it's my discretion. Okay. Do you mind if we just do the consent agenda, then we'll bring it back up? Thank you. Consent agenda items.
We do still have to do public comment on them.
Public comment.
This amended payroll and the payout of the office manager, does that mean Mrs. McGrath is no longer employed here? And if you can answer that, that would be great. That's all I have.
Yes. Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Ms. Lucy. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I wanted to speak to the Sand District situation. And as your board knows, the
Madam President, we're
I know, this
on
is
the consent agenda.
Agenda.
That's the next public comment.
Okay.
My fault. You can put it down, write it down, document it. This one's my fault. Okay. Does anybody have anything else they want to add to the consent agenda? No. I'll entertain a motion to approve the items with the supplement of the payroll modification.
I so move.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? It passes. Now we're going to do public comment.
5-0.
Okay.
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker, and I would like to speak to some of the things I heard a few minutes ago. With regard to the spill, it looks like Ms. Lucy's looking for someone to blame. And if I were you, and I will, I'll say it, I blame John Wallace. The pipe that we're bypassing went bad on his watch. They analyzed it. They had a plan of action of how to fix it. It never got implemented, like many of the things the Wallace Group did and got paid for. So the bypassing and the backup pumps and the emergency you're in now is because he deferred a necessary project, and now you're in an emergency situation that could have been much worse. With regard to Mr. Guerrero's report on the sanitation district and his displeasure with the statements made by Mayor Hill, my understanding was that, and I recall this from previous meeting, Mr. Hill had informed your board that he had made contact with the Regional Water Quality Control Board chair and that there was going to be some meeting of the minds. And
Mr. Hill has no authority to do that. There is no board direction
okay,
for him to be
meeting. You're interrupting
me. I apologize. Give her some seconds, but I just want you to know that for the record.
That's fine. Yeah. But my understanding of what came out of that meeting was not that he was saying you were misled, is that the chairman of the Regional Water Quality Control Board was suggesting your legal counsel had misled you, misguided you, and that's why your settlement hadn't been agreed to. So I think it was genuine that Mr. Hill brought it before the public. And very refreshing, to be perfectly honest. The public's not included all too often. And it's nice to know that things are happening, or maybe there's some resolve in the near term. Something you didn't mention, Matt, was the rules of decorum that were on that agenda sparked a lot of concern and controversy, and then thankfully your board chose to continue it indefinitely because I think it was self-generated by staff, the work, and you're going to get a hefty bill for it, and violates the Constitution as well. And the last thing I'll mention is the billing situation. I'm certain when Mayor Scholes agreed to pay the last installment, the $11,000, the message was supposed to be relayed to you, and I've seen the email from Rick Sweet, where he told you or didn't tell you in uncertain terms that he wasn't going. The board wasn't going to enter into the agreement, but Mayor Scholes expressed a sincere request of your district to continue to collect, and that we'd work out the cost in the future. But they were not going to agree.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker.
That was 2 weeks earlier, Karen. You weren't at that meeting, so that
thank
is
you, Ms. Tucker.
The impression I got, and that's what happened.
So just to follow up, Mr. Guerrero, did the Sanitation District vote to have a dialogue with the Regional Water Group?
No.
They did not?
No. No board member was directed to go speak with them to try to settle the claim. There was some discussion that our dismay regarding a couple of items be conveyed, but there's no authority for anybody to be trying to settle a claim. We have attorneys for that.
Okay. And the rules of decorum, I'm glad staff took the initiative. Obviously they could see that it had turned into, you know, a situation where nothing was moving forward, but everything was moving backwards. And so is something going to happen with that?
There may be something brought back. It's not
Let's
a project.
Hope.
It's not a project I was working on. And so Mayor Scholes may have something brought back. We'll see.
Okay, but Mr. Scholes is in charge of that, or?
He may. He was the one that was expressed some interest in it, so he may continue to dialogue with staff. I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right, so I'll get clarification.
Mr. Edwards' turn here.
All right. Do I hear any more public comment? Does anybody else want to speak?
Mr. Edwards is here.
Oh. Sorry.
No apologies.
Didn't roll my eyes the right way.
Thank you, Ms. Lucy. Board members, my name is Jeff Edwards, and I did want to speak to the Sand District situation. As your board knows, there was at least 400,000 gallons of raw sewage released into the island neighborhood on December 19th of 2010. That's almost 5 years ago. And I can tell you shortly after that spill, John Wallace hired the Downey Brand Law Firm, who you currently have working for the Sand District. Melissa Thorm is the lawyer. I can tell you that the $1.1 million in mandatory minimum penalties that's outstanding has been very protracted. And as it turns out, the Downey Brand Law Firm has botched the settlement negotiations. That's clear. They've been on the payroll for over 4 years. They changed the venue from San Luis Obispo Superior Court to Sacramento, which, gee, is next to her office. Why would you allow that to happen at the Sand District? It's absurd. The settlement negotiation should have moved swiftly. I understand there's been at least two settlement offers. And what Mr. Hill was able to glean from the current chair of the regional board is that your counsel, the Downey Brand Firm and Melissa Thorm, have not characterized the settlement and couched it in terms that are acceptable to the board for consideration, the state board, because that's where it is now. So, you know, it's time to change lawyers. It borders on malpractice, what that firm has done to the Sand District. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I think her firm has been paid several hundred thousand dollars in the last 4 years with no settlement in sight. So if I were on the board, as Matt and Ms. Lucy do serve, I would be very concerned about why there was no progress with the settlement negotiations. And now it's being cleared up a little bit. It's starting to become clear why the problem. Get rid of the Downey Brand Firm. That's the message. Now, I'd also like to take this opportunity to speak to 13A, and that's the performance evaluation of your general manager. He won't be here at the next meeting, but he will be in line.
No. Mr. Edwards, please do not try to abuse the podium. Don't
please, give him a raise. Thank you.
There'll be public comment on 13 before
there,
a closed
there
session.
There definitely will be public comment. But, you know, if you can say anything, I can sign it, and I'm telling you not now. Okay, so any more public comment on items outside committees, inside committees, opinions? Yes, sir.
Charles Varney, I don't know if this is the correct time, but I did send you all a copy of a letter that the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District sent to the Public Utility Commission in November of last year, in which they designate...
Sir, I have to stop you, too.
Okay.
Because these are for items that are on the agenda under this section. So if you want to talk, like, on your letter, right, we would do that on the first public comment for items not on the agenda.
Okay.
I certainly will look at the agenda. We're gonna take like a cough break here in a minute, and I'll look at the agenda and see where we can slip it in, because I do think it's a value, and we do all have it. But at the least, we have it.
And I did receive it. I replied to you. I think
President Lucy, if I might, the correspondence did relate to the item that Mr. Varney previously spoke to. Which relates to the bridge of the railroad and risks associated with the proposed oil transport. And that email has been forwarded to all of the board members.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Charles.
Okay.
I really appreciate your efforts.
And so I'll make sure it goes. Actually, we're able to upload that on the website as well. You know, so. But I think this is probably more valuable to get up on the website as far as a community notice, correct?
Well, certainly items that are handed out at the meeting do go up on the website.
Okay. So we'll get it up there and we'll get it out there. Okay. And on that note...
Madam President, if I might address some of the public comment that we just heard.
Sure. Then
briefly.
We're going to take... I'm sorry, a lot of us have a cold... And we're trying to hold back the coughs, and so we're going to take a small break after that. How's that? I mean,
okay. So with respect, I wanted to point out, especially for the listening audience, to a little bit of the pronouns that Mr. Edwards had used in his public comment. One of the statements he said was, why would you allow the sand district and then to do something, but obviously the sand district doesn't report to your board. Another statement that he spoke to was that your counsel, as if this Sacramento law firm was your board's counsel, which is not the case. So just a quick clarification for the listening public, that with respect to his comments, it sounded at times as if he was stating that your board had hired that legal counsel or that it was your issue. And certainly this board has an appointee that will sit on the Sand District's board, but it's really the Sanitation District who hired the legal counsel and has the direct responsibility of working on that particular issue. The other comment came from Ms. Tacker, who had mentioned her recollection at the Sand District meeting that one of the directors had maybe asked or posed the hope that this district, OCSD, would continue to bill for the sanitation district without an agreement or without anything being resolved. And what I would like legal counsel Minnery to address is that with the action that your board previously took, I do not believe that I have any authority to do so, and certainly we can address that as a future agenda item as well, and I think we have a little bit of follow-up discussion during future agenda items because we would like to see the issue resolved. But again, I would like to turn to Mr. Minnery on that point that Ms. Tacker brought up, which is on the authority of that I have to even continuing billing at this point in time.
President Lucy and directors of the board, in follow-up to Mr. Ogren, at the last meeting, this board did take a position to send a letter with an offer to the SAND district. That offer was declined, and in that letter it did state if the offer is declined, then come July 1, the services are going to cease. So while I think that Mr. Ogren does have certain inherent authorities to negotiate potentially changed or different deal, that would still have to come back to your board for approval and your board's ratification of anything like that. So at this point, without further direction to Mr. Ogren, though, I think his hands are legitimately tied just based on the actions of your board.
That's what I understand, too.
And that's my understanding in reading the sanitation district's policies and procedures is that they must have a contract for services rendered, and there is no contract.
There's a verbal contract.
Beyond a verbal contract.
There was the verbal agreement, but that's clearly been extinguished.
But the policies and procedures say a written contract.
It's clearly been extinguished now by the actions.
But what I want to make clear to the residents is when we say services, we mean billing services, not actual water and sewer services, and that OCSD will continue to collect fees for the residents of Oceano, correct?
For the services, for the water services provided by this district and the wastewater collection services provided by this district. But unless there's a resolution of this billing service issue, I don't have the direction or the authority to continue to collect the fees on behalf of the sanitation district.
So let me ask you, how's this going to look for the everyday person like myself who just, you know, I mean, I have mine on auto pay, but not everybody is on auto pay, right? So, and I did that because I got a couple door hangers.
We all do. It's okay.
But I usually don't do that. So how does that look? Is there going to be a little customer service desk outside the sanitation district? Oh. And then I'll pull up in my car and make my $29 payment?
I think that those are the issues that the sanitation district staff is evaluating right now, is what are their options. And OCSD may continue to be an option and might rise to be the best option again, but that's the evaluation that the sanitation district staff is undertaking at this time.
The residents of Oceano are kind of at the SAND district's mercy at this point?
No.
To do the right thing.
You know, all of the constituents of the sanitation district, just like all of our constituents, always look to us to do the right thing. So, but, you know, the idea that this issue right now is first and foremost in the hands of the sanitation district as to what do they want to do this fiscal year for billing services, yeah, that's theirs. We and your board adopted and we delivered to them a notice and offer. We gave them an opportunity. They chose not to act on that. If they then take action that they have a request for us to do something, then I think we should be open-minded to the request. But at this point in time, the ball is in their court. And under future agenda items, I do want to talk about the idea of considering a special meeting so that we can be responsive to the sanitation district in the event that they develop a request at their meeting next Wednesday.
Okay. And so if they contact, if staff or legal and or legal are contacted, I would ask this board for the direction to go ahead and engage in those discussions.
And that's what Mr. Minery spoke to, is that we have that general responsibility already, and we have been engaged in the discussions. I talked with General Manager Sweet today, and I believe that legal counsel also had discussions today with their legal counsel. So we're actively engaged in wanting to develop a resolution to this issue.
But nothing can happen until we have another meeting.
Right.
On our side.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay, I'm going to move this agenda.
Okay.
How about taking a break? I thought you can take a break.
I am going to take a break. But we have to go back and do 7 relatively quickly.
We did 7, Tony.
We did 7?
20 reported, yeah.
Okay, very good. So all in favor of taking a 5-minute?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Order, thank you very much for bearing with us. Moving on to item number 10A, consideration of recommendation to adopt a resolution to modify resolution 2015-03 by consolidating 2 grant applications into a single application and giving it a new name.
President Lucy, I think you did a good summary of this action, and I have no further comments.
I make a motion that we approve the recommendation to adopt a resolution to modify resolution 2015-03 by consolidating 2 grant applications into a single application.
I'll second.
And what would you like to call this application?
Whatever it's called.
The Water Resource Reliability Program, the RAP.
Water Resource Reliability. REAP?
RAP. RRRP, RAP.
RRRP, okay. Okay, do I hear a second on that?
I did, yes.
Okay. Jennifer, seconded?
No, Matt did.
Matt seconded it. All right.
Your roll call.
Any discussion? Hearing none. We'll have to take a roll call on this.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. It passes 5-0. Hearing items. Mr. Ogren?
Certainly, President Lucy. First off, I want to thank Ms. Ruiz for all of the work on this particular item. I'll do a quick verbal summary.
Thank you.
Other than my review of her draft items, she really has done all of the work. I shouldn't slight Mr. Minery, who reviewed the resolution and signed it as the legal form and effect as well. But this is the standard annual process in order to collect delinquent bills that haven't been paid and to have them placed on the county property tax rolls for collection in order to ensure it. Certainly the most cost-effective means of collecting delinquent bills that we have available to us. The exhibit on page 5 of 6 of this item, or 23 of 24 of your package, has a number of properties crossed out because those individuals, after receiving Ms. Ruiz's notice, have paid the bill.
Yay.
In addition, if the other 2 property owners pay by July 27th, then they will be deleted from the list as well. Any remaining on July 27th will then be forwarded to the county auditor for collection on next year's property tax roll. That's a statutory process that's used by many agencies, and that concludes my verbal report.
Yeah. Okay. Can I say something?
Yes, please.
I think it's really commendable that there are only 2 persons that have not failed to pay in this time of economic woes and what have you. It just seems like that our staff has done a very good job in collecting and keeping people current and working, I think, probably working with people to keep the accounts in the black.
And certainly, Miss, I've noticed and observed many good dialogues that Ms. Ruiz has with our customers. I will note that the greatest area where we don't have the ability to collect is when somebody hasn't paid a bill and then somebody sells the property, because we can't take this action against a new owner for a bill that wasn't paid against a prior owner. So we do have some uncollectible bad debt every year. It is relatively minor, but it's primarily when homes are sold and the prior bill is not paid. So, well, we can't use the property tax roll to get them. We could, you know, take them to small claims court, try to get a judgment, and then try to proceed and try to get a lien on other property they might own. The problem with that more traditional approach of going to small claims court is that it has so much cost associated with it, and you have to do it for each individual item separately, versus in this situation, we can bring them all together and have a single hearing, and your board essentially acts in a quasi-judicial role.
I'd also like to point out, too, is that Oceano has, they have probably the least reportable properties to the county to, you know, as a lien than any other geographic area. I mean, two for 7,200 residents is minimal, and it really speaks to the community of Oceano, I think. You know, most of the times it's lists, I mean, pages and pages of people who aren't able to keep off their tax rolls. So I really applaud the residents of Oceano for doing their best to stay current. So thank you very much. And on that note, I'll entertain a motion for...
I'm sorry.
More comment?
No. I think you need to take public comment on this because it's a hearing item.
Is there anybody who would like to speak public comment on this? No?
The Blackburn Boys.
I'll entertain a motion on agenda item number 11.
I'll move to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay. Can we get a roll call on this one, Celia, please?
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. It passes 5-0. Thank you very much for everybody's hard work. Jeff, Celia, Pablo, thank you very much. And, of course, Tony.
President Lucy, would you mind if we moved the closed session items until after received communications?
Can do.
Yeah. Mr. Guerrero, item number 4.
But,
yeah, I'm fine with that.
But Charles, I think, wanted to speak to the email and the letter that he sent to us, and this would be a good time to do that.
Okay. Received written. Okay, so we're going to. Do we have any utility items? No? Okay, so we're going to hold off on 13 for one moment, jump to 14, and speak to any received written communications. Mr. Varney.
Thank you, President.
Told you we'd find you a place.
Interested in when I received a copy of this letter from the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District of last November, in which they specifically call attention to the Union Pacific Railroad Bridge across the Arroyo Grande Creek, in which they have some serious concerns about the impacts of the Phillips 66 oil trains, which are, in particular, they're very concerned both about the poor condition of the bridge and its support system. In fact, they recommend this bridge should be a priority bridge for inspection in the near future. But they're also very worried about the impact of the heavy weight of each of the large tank cars weighs 210,000 pounds, and there's 80 of them rolling across there. Five a week, and when you get a look, and I very much appreciate Ms. Ruiz forwarding on to you the letter via email so that you have the good pictures and you can see the deterioration there. And so what I was interested in is, I don't know if this is something that one of your collaborative organization or your joint organizations that you have with other entities, if you would take it there, or if this kind of falls onto your shoulders to take under consideration and to maybe do something about, or write another letter to officials encouraging something be done. So that's my query.
Does your organization have a sample letter or something that individuals can pick up or download or something and encourage them?
We have a number of copies of letters that with regards to the overall Phillips 66 oil train terminal project, where the city of Goleta or Santa Barbara or Monterey, Santa Cruz school districts have written to the Planning Commission saying we don't support this project for da-da-da-da-da reason. In terms of this specific topic on this railroad, I don't have a sample letter other than this one.
Okay, can you, one moment, Karen. Can you just read us off your email address again, your website?
No, my website's for my pottery.
That'll do.
Okay, so a good website to go to is protectslow.org.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And I think you also gave me this form here, Forest Ethics, and it has a link here to tell President Obama and Congress to get exploding oil trains off the tracks. You can sign it, add your name to the list.
And there is a link at protectslow.org to go to that, and it's a very convenient. All you do is put in your zip code, and it shows you the blast zone of the Department of Transportation has established parallel to the rail tracks. It basically covers up Oceano. Mm-hmm. It's a lousy copy that I gave you there, but you can see it for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not pretty.
Okay, Karen.
Yeah, I have a question. You guys are in Zone 3, and I go to Zone 11A.
Yes.
Is this bridge is also a narrowing spot of the Rio Grande Creek, or not, or
yes,
questionable spot of the Rio Grande Creek, has it been taken up at all by Zone 3 or Zone 11A?
That was going to be my comment. Is that, yeah, I think it's appropriately referred to the Zone 1 and 1A Advisory Committee, because certainly some of the illustrations show debris against the bridge during high flow events, and those high flow events, the capacity of that is less than a 10-year capacity storm right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it is well understood that in high rain events, the flows in the creek come up to the bridge level. And the comment of what is the potential risk when there's 210,000-pound rail cars riding over that bridge during a flooding event. And so that is directly the purview of the Zone 1 and 1A Advisory Committee. Yeah. I know that San Luis Coastal Resource Conservation District also participates in those meetings. And one of the issues of consideration of that advisory committee could even be, independent of whether or not the Board of Supervisors acts in support or opposition to the proposal, if in fact it moves forward, then at a minimum that bridge is a risk facility, and it would seem that 1 and 1A would want to consider a letter to the Board of Supervisors addressing that specific facility. So again, just like your board has an appointee of the Five Cities Fire Authority, and that's the appropriate board to address the overall health and safety risks and how we would be responding in the event of an emergency, the Zone 1 and 1A Advisory Committee has direct purview over this particular facility, and it has been a long-term discussion on that committee level.
Yeah, because we talk about blasts, but we also have an ocean out there. And
independent from
that bridge is right at 22nd
Street.
Right. I mean,
I remember from many years ago, there was a derailment in Northern California where I think it had a significant impact on the Russian River.
And
I'm not sure if I have the right river, but Again, a train derailed. There was a lot of loss of some dealing sort of...
It was kerosene dealing.
Yeah, and had... So anytime we see a situation near watersheds and rivers and stuff, that's the issue itself, independent of, you know, blast risks and stuff.
And just so you know, I do live very close to that that bridge that we're speaking of, and when I first started walking down there, I could clearly walk underneath that overpass without bending down or anything. And the pictures that you forwarded, you know, it was during, I guess, probably 2010 when those pictures were taken. Now you can't walk without basically getting on your knees. So if we were to have water, rain, to the point where the creek would fill up, it would go right over the top of that bridge.
Yeah, it's going to fill up a lot quicker.
Yeah, because the sediment is just probably 5 feet, you know, higher underneath it. So if there was a train sitting on top of that bridge, well, it wouldn't be sitting there very long. If there was any force behind it or maybe a log or something.
Well, the bridge is long enough that it would probably hold 5 or 6 cars. I mean, in terms of the whole...
Maybe three.
Okay.
Three.
So we're looking at... I mean, it's more than 210,000. Maybe it's 600,000, 700,000 pounds.
The point is that it needs to be...
It needs to be really checked out.
Rectified and secured.
Well,
and I think that that's the point. And
well, I think that's wonderful that you could, you know, work with that advisor, with that zone, and then also looking at the larger fire dangers and how our fire authority would... What could they do? How could they respond? And what's their assessment of that?
Correct. Thank you very much for coming out tonight. We really do appreciate it, and
well, thank you.
Enjoy hearing from you.
It's really good to feel welcomed. I shared with Matt that our experience at the Pismo Beach City Council is just very arrogant and very dismissive and just being stonewalled. And so to feel like we're kind of working together and kind of have a similar goal to protect the safety of the community is very rewarding, and I appreciate you being my government.
Thank you, Charles.
Well, the railroad, with or without oil cars, represents
a risk
to the community. Crossing the tracks at Beach Street represents a threat to the community. I mean, before we ever go any further.
Yeah. And it's, sometimes it's not if, it's when. Mm-hmm. So, thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going to move back to 13 at the advice of Mr. Guerrero. And I'm going to pass the floor over to Mr. Minery.
Okay. And with that, the board will adjourn to closed session. Item 13A, pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, the performance evaluation of the general manager. And item 13B, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.92. This is conference with district counsel regarding anticipation of litigation. There's one case to be discussed, and this is in regards to a claim made by the former office manager, Ms. McGrath.
Okay. I guess we'll adjourn. Are you ready, AGP?
Yes.
Okay, let's roll.
Okay.
Okay, we're back from closed session. Mr. Menery, can you please give us an update on that?
Yes, on item 13A, the general manager was given a satisfactory review of his performance evaluation. On item 13B, direction was given to staff and district council on how to proceed.
Great. Thank you very much.
I'll move to adjourn.
Any late received written communications?
Nope.
Future agenda items? No? Future hearing items?
We've already discussed that.
I'll make it. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Good night.